I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, welcome to In the Pink, sponsored by Bose. Stay home, stay healthy, stay connected.
Okay, let's fast forward then. So we go into this sort of golden era for cycling, and then that means that by the time we got Olympics on home soil, you know, you're riding the crest of a wave, and you've got this whole kind of army of fans behind you. But quite literally, you were at the forefront with as the flag bearer in London. I mean, what a moment that must have been.
Well, it was never really on the radar. So I had, you know, everything was planned to, you know, with real precision, and we kind of use F1 as our gold standard to look to in the way that F1 teams operate. And Dave Brailsford used them as his, that was the template really, marginal gains. That whole philosophy came from Formula One. So many things are, you know, you're trying to think of everything, every single possible thing to control, to optimize, to get the best out of. And then last minute, the spanner in the works was, you know, guess what? You've been nominated to carry the flag by your teammates. And it, one of the biggest honours you could possibly imagine. But equally, it was like, well, you're going to be walking for about 4 hours or on your feet for at least 4 hours on the night. You're racing, you know, 3 days later. You would never, ever, as cyclists, one of our mantras are, you know, don't stand when you can sit and don't sit when you can lie down. So, you know, cyclists never walk anywhere. They will rest their legs at any opportunity they can. And here I was, right, here's stand with the flag and stay on your feet for 4 hours, you know, a matter of a couple of days before your competition. But there was no way I was going to miss it. So it was like, well, right, what do I do then? Well, you know, get one of these little, you know, these little chairs that fishermen have, or, you know, they're kind of, you can, the portable chairs you pop out so you can sit down and rest your legs. So when you basically line up at the village and make this walk, it's only about maybe 2 miles, but from the village into the stadium. And but you're, it takes you 3 or 4 hours to get there. You're doing it in really slow segments. You stop and there's crowds on either side and you're waving and chatting and, you know, posing for photos and stuff. But it takes so much energy, sort of emotional energy out of you, because it's so exciting and you're so hyped up. The whole team's with you, that there's a risk that you can get through the opening ceremony and be absolutely drained. And even like now, it's quite pertinent to the world we're in now, but even things like picking up bugs. So you're shaking hands with so many people, you're high-fiving. So you have this, I had my gel on the little pack on my hip, and I was just putting hand gel on every sort of 30 seconds to try and not pick up bugs, because in Beijing, the triathlon team was wiped out with a diarrhea and vomiting bug, and they were in our block, and we were told, you know, you don't touch lift buttons, don't touch door handles, don't touch handrails, anything at all, don't shake hands. You know, we've got to be on full lockdown here to try and minimize the chance of getting sick, and we got through it unscathed. So you learn these little things, just marginal things you can do to minimize risk. So anyway, got to the final point of about to walk into the stadium with the flag. And it was just like this moment of realization that the last 4 years, the hard work, the ups and downs, the injuries, the defeats, the, you know, I only just got selection for the Olympics as well. The things hadn't gone that well the last 6 months, and it was a really tough time. And I was 36. So it was, you know, for an athlete in a sprint event, I was really old. I was the oldest of any gold medalist, certainly in history, to do a sprint event in cycling. So all these concerns and worries and negativity, you know, ups and downs, I finally got there. And I stood there with this flag and walked out, and Bowie's Heroes pumps out, and there's confetti, and it was just the noise, everything about it. I remember thinking, the last 4 years, the hard work, it's been worth it for this moment. So it took the weight off my shoulders. I didn't feel as if I had extra pressure as a flag bearer. I thought, well, that was all worth it for this one moment. And without doubt, looking back in my life so far, that those few seconds walking in there were amongst the most special, and including, you know, the birth of your children or, you know, anything else, getting married. It was right up there. It was a really, really special moment.
That's amazing. And we talked a lot about the sort of mental side of your sport. Physically, how tough is it? Because you touched on it there, being 36, you were pretty old to be doing what you were doing. How much you kind of like how finely tuned are you, and how much physical effort do you need to put into each event?
Well, because it's a sprint event, although the races are quite short, it means the intensity is maximal. So every session you do, every training session, if you can't do 100% effort, there's no point in training. So it's physically, I'd say it's as hard mentally as it is physically. So every single day you come in, you can't just turn in and sort of do a session, get through it, either do it properly or don't do it at all. So you have this mentality of being able to switch on focus for a few seconds and then switch off. So you can be in the track centre on a training day, having a laugh with your teammates. And then as soon as your name gets called to go on the track, it's like switch on, you step on the track, full intensity, being really like true 100% effort. And you can be lying on the ground afterwards, throwing up, you know, it's physically, it's a really grim event to train for. Certainly the 1,000 metre time trial, the amount of lactic acid or amount of lactate your body produces, that real burning sensation, it's not pleasant, but it's what you have to do to get the best out of yourself. So every single session, you are on the limit. And the confidence you would get from knowing that there's nothing more you could do in your training sessions, in literally every single effort of every single session, if you gave 100%, when you got to the start line on race day every 4 years, you could almost take the pressure off. You knew that, well, if I win, I win. If I don't win, I don't win, because you've got to shake the guy's hand if he beats you, fair enough. But as long as you've done everything you can within your powers to be the best you can be, that's all you can ask for.
As long as your hand sanitizing after you shake his hand.
Yeah, exactly. Fist function. Yeah.
I don't know if I've made this up, but I seem to remember somewhere you saying that your thighs were bigger than your wife's waist. Is that true? Have I made
well,
that
up? It all started because, you know, good old Daily Mail or whoever the tabloids were, the first thing they wanted to know. So after, like, you know, you got all these journalists who follow your career when you're competing, and then all of a sudden the Olympics, all the tabloid journalists pile in and want to know everything. And so it was like, wow, look, how big are your legs? 27 inches. And then they sort of came back and said, that's bigger than Posh Spice's waist. And I was like, wow. And then, it was like, well, and then my wife said, well, that's bigger than my waist too. And it was just one of these things people used to say, you know, they used to compare Posh Spice's waist to my legs. I think, yeah, a lot of people have waists that are smaller than my legs. Maybe not now, but yeah.
That's great though. And then how did you feel after competing at the British Olympics in 2012? Because you spoke earlier about sort of not getting your kicks in the same way. That must have been some kind of come down after London 2012.
Well, it was, but it was also, I kind of realised in that time that it was the end of my career. I certainly knew that it was my last Olympic Games. I was hoping to try and continue on until Glasgow 2014 for the Commonwealth Games, but certainly I knew it was my last Olympics. I'd hung on with, you know, by the skin of my teeth, really. My body was, I was picking up injuries. I wasn't recovering as well as I used to when I was younger. So I was able to just to almost reflect. It was a period of reflecting on my whole career and just being so grateful that it all worked out, because it was a tough old time. And all these things, whenever we had any, you know, we didn't have kids at that point, so Callum and Chloe weren't born. So we had this list of places we wanted to go to and visit, things we wanted to do. And whenever I was struggling in training or having a tough time, you know, we'd sit down in the evenings and write down, you know, on my phone, and sort of add in a little thing. Oh, let's go and visit that hotel, that restaurant, or go to that place in the world we've not been to yet. So we basically plotted this amazing holiday it was the start of 2013. And yeah, we went to all over the place. We went to Thailand, Cambodia, out to Australia. We drove the whole of the East Coast right up to in Queensland, North Queensland, back down. And then we flew into, went to Melbourne for the F1, and I had my first ever driving motorsport race. I raced in a celebrity challenge.
I remember.
I'm sure you were there for it. Yeah, yeah.
There. Yeah.
And I got the car got absolutely smashed up. I got came second in the end, but it was like dodging cars. It was crazy. But that really kind of ignited my passion for motorsport. I mean, I was already planning to do a bit of racing before that, but that, you know, as your first ever race, to be doing it in front of a, you know, Grand Prix audience on race weekend, it was absolutely amazing. But this was the most incredible holiday I had, and I thought, you know what, I'm so lucky to have been through this amazing career and to have achieved what I never dreamt I would, even win one gold medal, let alone six. So although it's the end of your career, and you know, there is a period of mourning almost where your career is over and you realize that's it, and you're coming to terms with the fact that you're retiring, but it was just the chance I had, all these new opportunities, the chance to start a family, you know, just an exciting time, and having a bit of balance in your life as well, because you have to be so one-dimensional and focus on one thing for so long, it can be quite exhausting mentally to then have the balance and the chance to do new stuff and not worry about how your legs feel every morning when you wake up and kind of, you know, it needs to roll out of bed and your body aches. It was quite nice to have a bit more of a normal, you know, angle to your life.
Because I was going to ask you where the passion for motorsport came from, but really listening to you for the last half an hour or so, I can totally see it, because you are interested in marginal gains. You are interested in preparation, controlling the controllables, all the things that we really focus and obsess about in Formula One. Mm. And presumably you have been able to get some kind of adrenaline fix from your pursuit of motorsport. Just tell us about Le Mans, tell us about all the other events that you've been involved in, and you know what you've made of it all.
Yeah, well, I was inspired by Colin McRae. He was my hero in motorsport, and I used to watch the World Rally all the time. And the fact that Colin did, you know, Dakar Rally, he did Le Mans himself, he got on the podium in Le Mans in GTE class. You know, he was an amazing guy, world champion, Scottish. So it was really thanks to Colin, A, he inspired me, and B, we did a documentary about his life and his career in 2013, and it was through the BBC and I was presenting it. So I got to meet Colin's family, and it was through that filming that I got a chance to race in a novice race series that year. And that's really where it all sort of started from, it spiraled from. But there, I guess motorsport, to people who maybe don't get it or who aren't interested in it, it's just, for me, the reason I love it so much, A, it's the obvious stuff, the speed, the adrenaline, the competition, that's amazing. But it's also being part of a team and having a common goal that you're all working towards, and having, you know, I love the data, I love the detail you go into. And when I first started, I couldn't believe the difference that, you know, raising the ride height a centimeter or a few millimeters could make, you know, change, you know, the fact that the tires can degrade so quickly and the effect that has on your lap times, all these tiny little things that go together to make this overall package, this performance package. So yeah, I love it, and my level is, and I'm, you know, an amateur driver, I'm never going to be that great, but what I love about the sport is you can compete alongside professional drivers, and you can look at your data, you can see how you can improve, you can see what they're doing, you can see what you're doing, and Le Mans is the pinnacle of that kind of program competition. And Le Mans, I had a Skeletric set when I was a kid. It was a Le Mans edition. I had two Porsche 911s with lights on them, and so I'd always been interested in Le Mans from a, you know, 5 or 6 years of age. And then 2016, I managed to progress through the ranks. We won the European Le Mans Series in 2015 to qualify for Le Mans. And there I was pulling out the pit lane, going down the Mulsanne straight, and Mark Webber's going past in the Porsche. And I remember just thinking, this is absolutely incredible. You know, it was a real sort of pinch yourself moment to be out there on the track at such an iconic race, living your dream.
That's a miracle. You've got the thighs. Mm. To get in there, I mean, you know, small. All these races are like little whippets, aren't they? You know,
they are, and that's the thing. You know, big legs don't help you in motorsport. In fact, I've broken more brake pedals on the simulator. So there was Nissan were my sort of main sponsor and supporter up to Le Mans, and we had a sim that I used to use, and they kept coming back with tougher and tougher rubber bushings for the brake pedal, because they said you've got to hit it hard. I was like, okay, I'll hit it hard, and they're like, no, not well. Okay, we'll get a stronger pedal for you. And I just kept breaking them. So in the end, it was just this realization that, yeah, strong legs don't really make a difference in motorsport, sadly.
One format that I love that I know you took part in was Race Champions. Because it's the idea that you put everyone in on a level playing field, because everyone's always arguing like who the best racer is. And you partnered with Grosjean, didn't you? Tell us about
that. That's right, yeah. Yeah, so basically I got a call from David Coulthard about Wednesday that week, And I was due to be going down there anyway for, it was in at Wembley, and there was a celebrity challenge where it was basically just been an aerial atom doing a little route around cones in the track centre. And David said, I think it was Lorenzo or somebody had injured themselves and they needed someone to step in. And it just so happened that was the season that where we won the European Le Mans Series. So technically, I was a champion that year in motorsport, albeit the amateur side of a pro-am team. And he said, do you want to come down and do this, you know, race of champions? I was like, well, of course I do. But equally, you know, I don't want to make an idiot myself because I'm up against, you know, the F1 drivers, the rally drivers, all the best drivers in the world. And he said, like, don't worry about it. Even if you're, you know, way off the pace, you're only going to be a couple of seconds behind. And on, you know, on a short circuit, it doesn't look that bad. Just have fun. Come down and get involved. And I did. I got down and I had about 45 minutes of practice on the empty track. And then it was straight in the deep end. I think I was against Pascal Wehrlein, or I'm not sure it was. There's a couple of different races, but it wasn't too bad. I was about maybe just under 2 seconds down after the race. So it wasn't like I was a million miles off, but what an experience. Yeah, a fantastic, fantastic time and a great celebration, a great party afterwards as well.
Yeah, I bet it was.
Thanks so much for listening to In the Pink. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast you've listened to so far. Please don't forget to rate, review and subscribe. Check out our Instagram page at in_the_pink. And you get all the details there about how you can win some of those Bose noise cancelling headphones. And join the community. We're all talking about the various guests that we've had on the podcast and who we'd like to see and hear in the next few weeks. So thank you for joining us. Stay with us. Stay healthy. Stay home. Stay connected with Bose.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.